Welcome to Tech San Diego's podcast, coming to you live from technology's perfect climate, and we're certainly living it up to it today. Got a nice, bright, sunny day, and doing everything we need to in San Diego. One of the things that we have talked about in the past is cybersecurity, and we brought some folks on, but I think we have a really, we have a really interesting take today. We have a company that has actually gone through a real live ransomware attack. And I also brought in to add our color commentary, one of the leading researchers from ESET. So before we get started, let me have them introduce themselves, and then we're going to jump right into these questions. Don't miss this. This is going to be very interesting, and this isn't out of a book or anything else. We're going to tell it like it is. So the first person I'm going to introduce is Joe Badano, who's the CEO of Endyme. Joe, I'm going to switch it over to you. Tell us a little bit about yourself and your company.
Yeah, thanks, Kevin. So Endyme is in retail tech. You probably have seen it in stores that you've visited, either customer assistance or anti-theft type devices that are in typical retail type stores. We're a San Diego company. My background is, I'm an engineer by training. I was a consultant at the Boston Consulting Group for a while. I have run a number of private equity-backed companies, mostly in the technology and communications technology space. And now I'm running Endyme here in San Diego.
Fantastic. So, Joe, to help us on this journey, I've invited the smartest cybersecurity guy I know, Ari Goretzky, from the best cybersecurity company in San Diego, ESET. Ari, tell us a little bit about yourself and then just a little bit about ESET.
Thank you for having me on today, Kevin. It's great to be here with you. A little bit of background. I am ESET's distinguished researcher. I've been here for almost 20 years, helping protect computers in San Diego, the U.S., and around the world. Previously, I founded an antivirus company called McAfee Associates. You probably haven't heard of them, though. But over the past 36 years, I've been helping people secure their computers, their networks, their digital lifestyles from threats.
Well, Ari, we have heard about some of your crazy coworkers at McAfee, and maybe someday we'll sit down for a beer and you can tell me some war stories about that.
Well, that's probably not material that would be suitable for your podcast audience. But you're on.
Sounds good. All right. So let's get right into this. This should be a really interesting story, and we're going to hear it right from the source. So, Joe, let's start with you. Kind of walk us through what happened during the ransomware attack. How did you first discover something was wrong?
Well, I would say it's the usual way. You come into work one day and all your screens show like, hey, you've been pwned by this ransomware threat actors, and your systems are locked up.
So, we're always told, and I'm sure we're going to hear from Ariane, but we're also told those first hours are like really, really critical. So, at what point did you realize it was like, this is a real ransomware attack where we need to take this seriously? And how did your internal team respond in those kind of first critical hours?
Yeah, so we had a cyber response program in place, but it's fascinating. You put these plans together in a kind of a theoretical context, and then one day you walk in and there it is, right? And now you got to actually do it. So now the rubber hits the road. So first thing we did was we had to call our cyber insurance company. You need to figure out, first of all, like, these threat actors have access to your systems. Do they still have access? How did they get in? All these kinds of things of if you try to reload your software and your data, is it going to get compromised again, right? So luckily we had some pretty gold-plated insurance. We contacted them. They put a rapid response team together. We had KPMG come in to do forensics. We had IT remediation services. We had lawyers. We had communication specialists. So we were surrounded by the A-team. And that helped us kind of program manage our way through our response. And first, you know, for sure, we knew it was for real. All of our systems were down. Our phone system was down. You know, our ERP system was down. Our CRM system was down. So we knew it was a for real thing. And we put all hands on deck to kind of get our feet on the ground. And what do we do next? And that's where, you know, this A team that surrounded us really had a very rigorous framework for how to approach this thing, get the forensics going, start to really figure out what really happened. So that was the kickoff. Then there was a long journey after that, but that was really, you know, day one. You know, what is the situation on the ground? What systems were affected? You know, it's kind of like, you know, you watch the old World War II movies with you call up Scotty and damage control and you get a report. You know, you got to figure out what works and what doesn't work and what the extent of the damage is. And then from there, you enact the rest of your game plan.
Did Scotty tell you the engines can't take anymore? Or?
I can't do it, Captain. Yeah.
So without and Ari, I'm sure you'd like to chime in on this, too. So without revealing anything sensitive, once the attack was how did the attackers get in? Was it a phishing? Was it a software vulnerability? A zero day? What do you think? How did they get in?
The forensics did a lot of analytics on what was a possible entry point. We it's unclear whether it was a phishing attack or whether it was just simply brute force. But that's really was just compromised credentials. And then there were a couple of other learning lessons that took place in terms of how they were able to bridge from one set of credentials to gain access to other systems.
Ari, how do you, you know, again, we're just talking about, we're just at the beginning of this, right? And so how do most, I want to say successful, I don't know if this was a successful one, but how do most ransom aware attacks, how do they initially get in?
Well, it varies quite a bit. Ransomware has become a very big business. Bear in mind, it's a illegal criminal business, but it's become its own business. And like any growing business, the ransomware ecosystem has exploded. There are initial access brokers, which are the folks who specialize in just getting that little foothold into your system, whether it be a phishing email, convincing a user to perform a password reset, looking for a vulnerability in an unpatched system that they can get access to, brute forcing an account password, lots of different ways.
Joe, when all this is going on and they're in, what systems or operations were you most worried or were impacted the most? Were you able to continue? Did things stop? What was the deal?
Yeah, I mean, in our particular case, and just to come back to the vulnerabilities, you know, the remote desktop, you know, we got a lot of people working remotely. Remote desktop is one of the biggest vulnerabilities that exist in the world today. And that was pointed out to us as well. So what we were very lucky in a sense that the only things that were really affected were our manufacturing systems and our CRM. All of our sensitive data was stored and securely stored in the cloud. And that was completely unaffected by that. So really none of our customer data was actually affected, but it did have an impact on like our phone system. You know, these were server-based systems that were locally hosted. And anything that's locally hosted is going to be where the damage is going to be done. We didn't really have any sensitive information that leaked out. You know, the threats were there of, you know, we're going to exploit all this data we harvested. Well, we know just from the amount of bandwidth we have in our system, the amount of data that we had, and the time of the first intrusion versus the time we got the ransomware node, there would be almost no, not anywhere near enough time to download our data. So, you know, the shame sites and the, you know, there was no like social security numbers, no credit cards, no nothing that they really got their hands on of any value besides like a couple of blueprints, maybe some ancient, you know, configurations that we had. So we weren't really subject to extortion from our data. It was more getting our systems back up on online so we could manufacture product. So that's really the extent of the damage. And then, you know, we were able, luckily, to recover everything without ever paying these people a dime.
You have these people around you now. You have your insurance around you and some legal folks, some IT. But, you know, as the CEO, right, you still have to establish, you know, what are the, you know, the three things I need to do, like, first? Like, what were they, did you set your own priority, or did you rely on other people? You said, look, we got to contain, we have to communicate, then I have to restore? Or what was kind of your priority list when you knew, you know, you were in the throes of this attack?
Well, any good kind of cyber response plan is going to give you that framework for how to respond. And for us, it was pretty straightforward. You know, we had the highest level, I would say, capability. KPMG was here. They brought in their like hardcore data scientists and cyber security experts. We did a bunch of forensics, and we, you know, once you have to contain, right? You have to understand what the nature of the problem is. You've got to understand whether these threat actors still have access, whether you can close the pathway that they use to get in. And then you've got to think about, you know, once you know your systems have been cleansed and access has been denied, you need to figure out how you're going to restore all your systems. For us, because it was really an internal issue, we didn't have really a material communication problems. But if we had, you know, credit card information or anything that was customer related, which got, you know, got compromised, that would have been a very different scenario. We would have had to really initially start with communicating, because you generally will have contracts that require you to notify your customers within 24 hours of any event that took place. But in these cases, because our customer data was not compromised, and these contracts are written in such a way that says, if our data is compromised, you must notify us. And you know, you got to be careful when you sign contracts that you would want to stay away from language that says, if there was any compromise of your systems, you must notify us. You want to keep that contained to only if it is thought to have affected their data, do they have to be notified. So you want to keep yourself out of that ballpark. We didn't really have to focus on communication. We could really focus on what happened. How did these people get in? Are they still there? Have we closed all the holes? And then we can shift gears and focus on remediation.
Ari, when you talk to companies that have gone through this, are there any areas that you see? You just said Joe laid out a pretty, you know, straightforward, you know, rational, logical way of kind of setting those priorities. Do you see companies focusing on the wrong things initially?
It does happen. It can depend on the nature of the business. For example, with a manufacturing business such as this, you know, the big concern there was downtime. How soon can you get back up and running? For a nonprofit, their most valuable IP might be their donor list. If you're a hospital system, patient data and the ability to keep treating people is a priority. So figuring out what is the most critical aspect of your business and ensuring that the continuity plan covers remediation from a ransomware incident is going to be key there.
So I'm going to ask a question that's a little controversial, right? And I've heard different aspects of it. And sometimes people say something in public and something else happens in private. So Joe already alluded to the fact that they didn't pay the ransomware attack. So the question, and both of you, I'd like to hear both your answers. You know, do you consider paying the ransom, and what factors should go into that decision?
First of all, I think from just a kind of ethical standpoint and just a a kind of, you know, you've been so horribly wronged by these threat actors that the last thing on earth you're ever going to want to do is pay them. And then, you know, in speaking to the experts in this, you know, you're dealing with, as Ari alluded to, an ecosystem of threat actors, right? There's the people who break in and sell that access. Then there's the people, they harvest the data from your systems, and then they sell that to people who are going to exploit the data. Then there's a third party who's going to do the encryption bid and extort you just to get your systems back online. And the experts that we dealt with, the negotiators, so you're not negotiating with them, it's all on the dark web. Bitcoin is the currency of crime. So of course, everything is in Bitcoin. And they're putting up a website where you can communicate to an intermediary who then communicates with the threat actors, right? So when you get to this point, there's these good threat actors and bad threat actors, right? So there's people who have reputations to uphold to say, like, when you pay us, we will actually decrypt your data and we will not continue to extort you. And then there's bad threat actors who are, you're going to pay them and they're going to say, oh, you know what? We changed our mind and we're going to want more money and so on and so forth. In our case, again, we got super lucky, right? And this wonderful experience that we had where we were dealing with, as they put it, a good threat actor who would make good on your payment and would actually decrypt it. And you know, of course, you're exposed to all these fascinating facts that you would never have to deal with otherwise. But the way the process works is, you know, it's like a business transaction. You know, this is a very big business for these individuals. We understood from the FBI that, you know, during COVID, the Southeast Asian casinos had to shut down and they needed to keep the flow of money flowing. So they diversified into cyber and started extorting people through cyber. So that created a whole new wave of cyber threats out there. And this is a multi-billion, if not trillion-dollar business that exists today of cyber. So you put a term sheet together with these people. You say, look, you're going to tell us how you got in. You're going to close that door. You're not going to sell our data. You know, and this is the terms that we want. And you negotiate that back and forth. You can get a little discount, you know, if you convince them that what they took is not that valuable, right? So there's this whole process for negotiating with these threat actors. And then you have to hope that, you know, you're going to send them a sample of the data and you're going to want it back decrypted so you can ensure that they are, in fact, in the ecosystem of players, they're the ones who hold the key so that they can actually do it. And then, you know, you come to terms and then you decide on a price and then you send them the Bitcoin and the process from there goes on. So we went a couple of weeks just doing our forensics and remediation. And then you get to a certain pain point where you actually consider it. We did consider it at a certain point because we got about 4 weeks out into this thing and we were having a hard time, you know, getting some of these systems restored for a host of other reasons that we discovered because we didn't test it up front. You say, like, well, you know, we have insurance for a reason. As much as I despise these threat actors and would never want to give them a penny, you start to consider it. Well, the moment we started to consider it, their dark website went dark. They vaporized. And, you know, in talking to the lawyers, they're like, well, you know, it could have been a merger and acquisition of the threat actors. The CIA could have taken them out. You know, you don't know what happened, but they're, oddly enough, there was no way to contact these people any longer. So if we weren't able to restore our systems on our own, we would have been in a world of hurt because we had no way to access the decryption key at that point.
Wow, interesting. Ari, give us your thoughts on this. I know you have some.
Definitely. I mean, the existential question here is really, do you enable the criminal's criminality? If you pay the ransom, you are sending a clear message, not just that you pay extortion to these folks, but that other criminals may decide, knowing that your business is extortable, to start probing your systems and networks, looking for vulnerabilities, because they'd like to make some easy, fast money too. And as you point out, there's for dealing with a criminal gang, there's a strange, what we call a perverse amount of trust that has to be established on both parties' sides, you know, to verify that they can indeed decrypt systems or give you a decryption key, a decryption tool. And that is a awfully expensive risk to make. Obviously, I work for a computer security company. My advice is always no, do not pay the ransom. But businesses and organizations are going to have different priorities and different pain points about how long it can take for them to recover. How long can you, in fact, remain out of business if you have to not just, you know, rebuild your entire IT infrastructure, but in effect, you're rebooting your company.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. And I think, you know, the inclination is never paying, but, you know, thank goodness we're not a hospital in a rural county in the U.S. with, you know, with not a lot of services. So, Joe, having gone through this, and this might be a tough question for you, looking back, like, what were the biggest gaps in your cybersecurity strategy?
So I think, you know, number one, we didn't test our plan, right? And what we found was that for some reason we had a we created ourselves a vulnerability of our backup. We had a software engineer who decided they didn't have enough room to store a lot of their software in a certain place and decided to use one of our backup drives as a place to store it, and that gave them access to encrypt our local copies of our backups. So then we had to download them from the cloud, and that turned out to be infinitely more time consuming than we thought. And, you know, we were in very difficult conversations with the backup cloud service that we had, and just saying, like, look, you're going to have to send us hard drives. And I mean, we're dealing with, you know, a big, big multi-billion dollar company, and they're telling us, you know, we can only write a trouble ticket, you know, and we're like, you are crippling our business. We're going to sue you till the walls cave in. And they're like, well, we'll just write another trouble ticket for you, and we'll hopefully somebody will get back to you shortly. And this went on for weeks. So that was one of the big gaps was, you know, it's usually the kind of 1, 2, 3, right? You have one local copy, that's offsite. And then you have the cloud as your last resort, because we learned that if you needed to download it from the cloud, that was going to be not hours or days, but weeks to download it from the cloud. So that I think was a gap. And of course, there was many other things that we very substantially upgraded in the aftermath of this.
That's good. I know, Ari, switching over to you for a second. I know you talk to hundreds of companies, and it's a very complex set of issues. And sometimes there's not a, you know, it's not a binary thing. But is there any common gaps that you see where, you know, a CEO say, "I wish we would have X." What would that be from your experience?
Well, a lot of times, what I'm seeing is that the business continuity plans fail to line up for when the actual event occurs. You may tabletop them, work through them, but unless you conduct an actual event and are able to, for example, simulate the data loss, you don't really know how quickly it's going to take you to get back on your feet organizationally wise. It's really clear that the ransomware events really test the fidelity of your backup procedures, for example. And that's, you know, quite correct. You know, one of the weakness here that was exposed was the cloud backup provider didn't offer a hard storage, return of data by hard disk drive. So something to consider if you have terabytes of data and limited bandwidth and time to see if you respond to an incident before, for example, the extortionists decide to up the pain point and start charging you more, threaten to release data, notify the public about your being a victim, and so forth.
And you know, that really, that tracks with what I'm seeing. One of the things that Tech San Diego was going to do last year, well, we're going to do a drill. We said, okay, sometime in next week, we're going to set a drill. And I talked to maybe a dozen CEOs, and they all told me, we don't need it. We're all taken care of. And I know, Joe knows, Ari knows that they don't. So I think actually going through a simulation and a drill for most companies, even though they think they have it handled, would probably be a pretty good best practice. And you know, one of the things I'm looking for in this podcast is to give that kind of advice. So Joe, and I'll let you guys each have a chance to answer this. You have 60 seconds with the CEO of a company. And the advice you're giving is to avoid a cyber attack. What are you going to tell them?
Well, I think, first of all, most CEOs think it's never going to happen to me, right? So I think there's a little bit of denial, like we have this, you know, we're compliant, we're SOC 2, we're this, we're that, and they think it's unlikely to happen to them, and maybe they don't take it seriously enough. I think you have to take it very, very seriously. So that's first thing, is just take it seriously. Number two, we've already talked about it. You know, you've got to test the plan, and you've got to really do a dry run and just try to download your stuff from the cloud. You know, make sure you have all those elements that are in your plan. You know, you got to just try them out. And third is really, you know, when the day comes, you've got to have the gold-plated insurance and the A team around you. Because even though we had a pretty solid plan, I think having, and because we were in the retail space, and luckily none of our customer data was compromised, we, you know, the insurance company didn't know that in going into it. So they can hand you, you know, a low level group, or they can give you, you know, like people like KPMG and bring in the real hardcore experts. You really want the hardcore experts around you. So make sure your insurance is up to date. Look out for your contracts and your communication plans that you have to go through. And if you have, you know, A+ insurance, and you'll be able to put the A team around you, you'll be able to get through it a lot easier and more swiftly if you've tested your plan and you actually have all those elements in place.
Ari, you got 60 seconds to tell a CEO what he should be looking for.
Well, first of all, I agree 100% with everything Joe said there, especially the part about you are going to become a victim sooner or later simply by dint of existing and having systems, however way they are connected to the internet. These attacks, the probes that for the initial access brokers occur continuously, and it's just a matter of them going back and seeing what their systems did that day and saying, oh, here's one I should explore. Yes, you need insurance, and it has to be very good insurance. Yes, you need good security systems in place, but I would argue that is an important part, but not the only part of the solution. And that is, you really need to become a security aware, security focused company. And that is not a technical issue. That is a social issue. It's how the company is organized, how the company views employees, how employees view the company. And that can be just as hard to build. But the organizations who do get these pillars correct are going to be the ones that are stamping out the ransomware attacks so they don't occur to begin with, or being able to turn around right on a dime, remediate it, and keep going business as usual.
Yeah, and I think, Ari, I think that's really good advice. One of the things I would say, too, is just become educated. You know, this podcast, we're talking about a very specific example. We could have a 2-hour podcast on the effect of AI on cybersecurity, right? And maybe that'll be a future one we'll have, where people are imitating not only voices, but videos and likenesses and all kinds of crazy stuff doing. You know, one of the things, you know, I try to keep up, and on cybersecurity. It's very difficult, but one of the ways in which I'm able to understand kind of the latest and trends and what's going on, I go to ESET.com. You guys have great white papers. You have great information. I always go to your ESET.com. I get your newsletter. So I feel like I'm a little up to date on what's going on, but I think you're right. It's creating that culture. That culture has to start from the top. If you're in the C-suite and you think it's IT problems or the general counsel problems or engineering, you're not going to survive. And so I think that's all really, really good advice. We're running a little over. I wanted to give you guys one last chance. Is there anything we missed or anything we should be talking about?
You know, I would say the silver lining of all this, you know, we went through this torture for a couple of weeks, but we came out the other side with gold-plated systems, with massively upgraded IT infrastructure, incredibly tight security. And I think we're a much more substantially better company having gone through it. And my advice to CEOs would be, like, don't wait to go through it to upgrade your systems and make sure you've got that culture of security. You know, phishing is getting so much more sophisticated. It doesn't have to be a cyber ransomware attack. I mean, it could be a man in the middle attack where they infiltrate your email and they get you to pay invoices that aren't real, right? There's a whole host of ways they're attacking companies these days. So I will just say, you know, coming out the other side of this thing, we are, you know, like 5x better than we were before it occurred. And sadly, we had to go through it to get there. And we probably could have got there without having gone through it had we taken it a little more seriously in the front end.
All right. Ari, any last words?
One thing I'll mention here, because it's a problem you didn't have, but some of the listeners might want to think about because they're in a different space, is the importance of keeping the communications open. This is not just to customers, but also to employees and vendors as well. If you are in a position where those relationships might have been affected, keeping the communications going and being updated at a regular, predictable cycle can go a long ways towards building and reestablishing trust. In the event of one of these, you know, horrible thefts, violations of your business.
Good catch, Ari. I'm glad you brought that up. Certainly, there's lots of buzz going around the company when something like this happens. And if you're not communicating exactly where you are, it creates a lot of distrust, as you said, not only for vendors, but for internal employees as well. So very good advice.
And if you're not getting extorted for like $20 or $30 million, you can forget about law enforcement or the FBI. That's just a complete check the box. We came here, interviewed you. We took some notes and goodbye. So that if you think they're going to do anything, you know, they're never going to do anything if it's a small, medium-sized company, that's for sure.
All right. Well, thank you guys. We did exactly what we said we were going to do. We walked through a ransomware attack. We talked about some do's. We talked about some don'ts. Ari provided some really good color commentary. So we'll go ahead and end this podcast on a good note. And Ari, Joe, thank you very much for participating.
Well, thank you, Kevin.
Thank you. A pleasure to be on with you today.